Hello and welcome to A Nerdy Book Club. My name is Polly, and this week we're going to be talking about The Short Second Life of Bree Tanner, an Eclipse novella. Just a warning, this podcast is marked explicit, meaning we sometimes swear and talk about sensitive subjects. Be sure to check the show notes for any content warnings. Make sure you check us out on social media. The best way to do this is to go to our website, cauldroncakesandwine.com. We have all of our social medias linked there. And there are spoilers ahead. There will be spoilers for the Bree Tanner novella and potentially other Twilight-related things. I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of an announcement, an update on this podcast. I will be posting weekly until the end of June. And then for the months of July and August, I will be switching to every other week because I'm going to be going to camp. So I'm not really sure what September is going to look like yet. In terms of uploading, it might be a little bit before I can get back to doing every week. I don't know yet. So I do know that for July and August, it will be every other week. And then we're going to try to go back to weekly, and hopefully I can get there quickly. It just depends what's going on in my life. Also, if you haven't gone and listened to our sister podcast, the FemFlix podcast, then you should go and check it out. My friend Asta and I, we record together, and we record on different things like film or TV, but film-based media, and it's always things that are made by women about sort of the female experience. So if you're interested in that, go and check it out. We just did an episode on the Netflix special Nanette by Hannah Gadsby, which if you haven't watched that, oh my God, you have to. It is so powerful. She just came out with a book very recently and she's done another special. I haven't watched the new special yet though. Austin and I took a little bit of a break from posting on that podcast feed and we're back now. So it's really exciting. Go and check us out. A little bit of a life update as well. I don't know. I've been like super up in the air about what I want to do with my life. I really love living in Toronto and I want to stay here. But then like sometimes I think about it and I'm like, my sister's having a baby and lots of my friends don't live in the city anymore. Like all of them have moved out of the city. So I just feel like my life is sort of socially in a different city, but where I want to be is in this city. So I'm a little bit torn. I think it's hard because I just love Toronto so much. And I just love living here. I also think that my mental health has like changed my life so much and I've given up so many things in order to be stable and healthy. And living in Toronto is one of the few things that I haven't had taken away from me. And so there is a little bit of me that just like clings to living in Toronto, and it's a pretty big part of my identity that it's like been unchanged throughout all of my mental health and lifestyle changes. So it's a big idea to move out of the city and to not live here anymore. I really doubt that I will move out of the city. I just love it so much. But it's something I've been like kind of throwing around in my head. But my friend Asta, like I mentioned, the one who I do the other podcast with, she was here this weekend and we had so much fun. We went down to the village and we saw a bunch of drag shows, and then we went to the MoCA, which is the Museum of Modern Art in Toronto, and the exhibits were just amazing. I've never been there before, and I just thought it was so cool. When you first walk in, they have all of these little like cubbies that have pillows and stuff so people can like sit there and just hang out, and it just felt so cozy and cool. Like all of the colors when you first walk in are just like bright neon colors, and it's just such a fun place. I can imagine if I was younger, like late teens, and I lived in the city, I would go there all the time and probably just hang out there. Also, one of the exhibits that we saw had a bunch of candy that was like laid out on the ground, and I caught a kid stealing candy from it. I didn't say anything. I'm no snitch. Gotta let those kids get away with murder. But I saw him like steal the candy, and I thought it was such a funny moment. Okay, so moving on to The Short Second Life of Bree Tanner, an Eclipse novella. You may be wondering why I'm reading this book, and frankly, so am I. This is just the last bit of the Twilight universe that I had not read, so I just thought, fuck it, I'm going in deep, and I might as well just finish off everything to do with this. This book starts off with an introduction from Stephenie Meyer, and I'm going to read it to you. No two writers go about things in exactly the same way. We are all inspired and motivated in different ways. We have our reasons why some characters stay with us while others disappear into a backlog of neglected files. Personally, I've never figured out why some characters take on strong lives of their own, but I'm always happy when they do. Those characters are the most effortless to write, and so their stories are usually the ones that get finished. Bree is one of those characters, and she's the chief reason why this story is in your hands, rather than lost in a maze of forgotten files inside my computer. The two other reasons are named Diego and Fred. I started thinking about Bree while I was editing Eclipse. Editing, not writing. When I was writing the first draft of Eclipse, I had first-person perspective blinders on. Anything that Bella couldn't see or hear or feel or taste or touch was irrelevant. That story was her experience only. The next step in the editing process was to step away from Bella and see how the story flowed. My editor, Rebecca Davis, was a huge part of that process, and she had a lot of questions for me about the things Bella didn't know and how we could make the right parts of the story clearer. Because Bree was the only newborn Bella sees, Bree was the perspective that I first gravitated towards as I considered what was going on behind the scenes. I started thinking about living in a basement with the newborns and hunting traditional vampire style. I imagined the world as Bree understood it. And it was easy to do that. From the start, Bree was very clear as a character, and some of her friends also sprang to life effortlessly. This is the way it usually works for me. I try to write a short synopsis of what is happening in some other parts of the story, and I end up jotting down dialogue. In this case, instead of synopsis, I found myself writing a day in Bree's life. Writing Bree was the first time I'd stepped into the shoes of a narrator who was a real vampire, a hunter, a monster. I got to look through those red eyes at us humans. Suddenly we were pathetic and weak, easy prey of no importance whatsoever, except a tasty snack. I felt what it was like to be alone while surrounded by enemies, always on guard, never sure of anything except that her life was always in danger. I got to submerge myself into a totally different breed of vampires, newborns. The newborn life was something I hadn't gotten to explore. Even when Bella finally became a vampire, Bella was never a newborn like Bree was a newborn. It was exciting and dark and ultimately tragic. The closer I got to the inevitable end, the more I wished I'd concluded Eclipse just slightly differently. I wonder how you would feel about Bree, such a small, seemingly trivial character in Eclipse. She lives for only 5 minutes in Bella's perspective, and yet her story is so important to an understanding of the novel. When you read the Eclipse scene in which Bella stares at Bree, assessing her as a possible future, did you ever think about what has brought Bree to this point in time? As Bree glares back, did you wonder what Bella and the Cullens look like to her? Probably not. But even if you did, I'll bet you never guessed her secrets. I hope you end up caring about Bree as much as I do, though that's kind of a cruel wish. You know this. It doesn't end well for her. But at least you will know the whole story and that no perspective is ever really trivial. Enjoy, Stephanie. Yeah, so I just wanted to kind of put this in here because I think that it gives a really good little viewpoint into why Stephanie wrote this book. And I'll talk more about that later. I do think that this was an interesting writing assignment. I can understand why she would have had so much fun writing this and looking at her book from a different perspective. But I just think that this book misses the mark a bit. And yeah, I'm going to get more into that. This book is written from the perspective of Bree. She's a newborn vampire. Early on, we learn that she's in Riley's gang, quotations. He is the leader. Bree is out on the streets at night and they are hunting. They are clearly pretty careless teenagers because one of the vampires named Kevin jumps into the street and pretends to be the Hulk in the middle of the street. And as a car's coming towards him, he throws the car in the air and basically causes this huge scene of destruction. They're supposed to be lying low, but they are not lying low. Bree meets Diego and we learn that he is around 11 months old. And it's kind of ridiculous. They are going to hunt a prostitute and a pimp. And I was like, do people still call them pimps? That just seems off to me. Anyways, aside from that, I was surprised by these early pages. I did like the writing at the beginning, and it's funny because Stephanie Meyer's books are, you know, like, they're not the greatest. They're pretty bad. But I think that the reason why they're not the greatest is because she focuses on the least interesting parts of her lore and of the universe that she's creating. I've always felt that way. The Cullens and their backstories are way more interesting than anything else we see in Twilight. Bree hunts and feeds on a woman, then she hides the body in the bottom of the ocean. Bree and Diego are becoming quick friends. He isn't like the others, and she feels like she can trust him, like he isn't going to kill her any second. Her and Diego, they go back and they clean up the mess that the other vampires had created, and they decide to take a break in a mall and they get some books and CDs. Diego tells Bree that he's heard one of the other vampires on the phone with her, like her. We know that this is Victoria, but obviously these two characters don't know that. And basically she sort of is mentioning that they are looking for vampires with special skills. And Diego says that he thinks that she needs protection and that Riley is in charge of creating them for the purpose of that protection that she needs. Otherwise, why would they be creating so many more new vampires all of the time? Bree calls herself a vampire nerd because she likes to follow the rules. She didn't cause any trouble. She hung out with the most unpopular kid in the group, and she's always going home early. I don't know, man. It's a little too close to Bella. Like, I just don't understand why she can't write another personality trait other than a quiet girl who likes books. As Bree and Diego get back to their house, they see that it has been destroyed, and we also learn that Bree thinks that they will burn into flames if they are caught in the sunlight. Diego tells her that he knows a place where they can go, and he takes her to sort of this underground cave thing that they have to swim up into and sit in to hide from the sun. While in the cave, Bree and Diego speak about their human lives. Bree was 15 and he was 18. Diego is very interested in what Riley is doing and what is like fully going on. We learn that both of them were troubled teens. Bree says that she was a few weeks away from becoming a hoe, as Diego put it, which is, I don't know. It's not shocking that Stephanie Meyer can't effectively write quote unquote troubled teens, but she just writes it in this really bulky and awkward way. You're like, no one talks like this. Diego says that he was going to school and he was going to get out of the ghetto. And I was just like, oh man, I don't know. Like, this just, it's cringe. It's really fucking cringe. And I know that it's like, okay, embrace the cringe. But like, this is really bad cringe. Like, I don't know, man. It just doesn't sit right. I think she's going for this like dirty and gritty kind of thing with these troubled teens living in the streets of Seattle as vampires, and there's just nothing gritty about her. So it doesn't come across at all the way she is trying to project it. We learn that Bree was living on the streets because she ran away from her abusive dad. Diego tells her that indirect sunlight doesn't seem to hurt them. And he knows this because he stood under a tree one time in the shade and nothing happened to him. So Bree is really confused about this because that isn't what Riley told them. Diego starts talking about all of these other things that don't make sense, like about wooden stakes. How could they pierce through their skin because they're rock hard? He ends up grabbing like a tree branch and he tries to stake himself, but it obviously doesn't work. And then he starts to dig his way out of the hiding spot and through some of the dirt that's above them. Bree hides in the water and she's watching as sunlight starts to break through around him, and she knocks him over and tries to stop him from bursting into flames. Her leg is caught in the sunlight and they see that she doesn't burn up, and they see that she's glittering, of course. The two of them go up to ground level and see each other in the sunlight, and Bree realizes that she has feelings for Diego. Ah! Oh my god, of course. Of course she would do this. Like, fuck, 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 fuck. I wouldn't have hated it so much. Except she's 15, maybe 16. She's not sure. She said she's either 15 or 16. And he is definitely 18. And yeah, they're vampires, but like, why does she need to do this? Like, why? What is her deal with age shit? What is the point of making them different ages? There was no reason they couldn't be the same age. Ugh. Oh my God, it's so fucking annoying. Why do they keep letting her write this shit and publish it like this? I don't understand. The two of them start looking for where the vampires have moved to because now their house is destroyed. They decide they're not going to tell Riley about the sun thing because they still aren't sure if he knows and is lying to them or if he just doesn't know at all. They find the house and there's a bunch of social dynamics happening in this environment. It seems like it's really, really hostile and you're constantly having to kind of watch your back and figure out who's aligned with who. They go out at night and they hunt and they talk about if they should tell Riley what they learned. Then Diego says that they should follow Riley. So Diego will follow him, and when he catches up with him at dawn, he's going to show him that he can go into the sun. And the plan is that Bree is going to kind of follow further behind, but she's going to be safer so that she has the ability to leave. And I don't know, man, it's a stupid plan. Like, they shouldn't tell him. But hey, they don't know what we know. So who knows what I would have done in that situation. But it seems very obvious that he is lying and that he is building an army of newborn vampires. So it just seems like this thing that's like very obvious. When they get there, they find Riley and the woman and they are making out. Then they hear Riley tell her that there are 22 of the young vampires. She hears him telling her about how he thought that he'd lost two, but they stayed in a cave overnight. Then she asks if he's sure, which they think is a really weird thing for her to say. Sure of what? He asks her if it's almost time and she says no, which he kind of gives a little bit of pushback to, but she's like, no, they're not ready. Then she tells him that 22 is really good and it won't be a match for their enemies. Obviously, they're talking about the Cullens. Then two figures walk up to the house, which are the Volturi members. Okay, listen. In theory, this should have been something that I read in the span of 2 hours. But I literally couldn't. I just couldn't find it interesting. So I just kept putting it down and not reading it. And like, it was so hard to pick this book back up. Like, I was a little bit in pain. I'm not gonna lie. Bree and Diego overhear the two new vampires saying that they've broken the rules. It's clear that these are members of the Volturi and they are not happy with them. They want to know what their plan is and how it relates to the local clan being the Cullens. They tell them that they have 5 days to work out a plan and be successful at it or they will burn. At this point, Diego decides that he's going to stay behind and talk to Riley and tell him about the sun thing. He tells Bree to get back and lay low and stay safe, then they kiss. This story is way too short and has way too many other things going on in it for this romance to feel anything but silly and sort of tacked on. There just isn't enough built into their relationship, but like classic Stephenie Meyer, ugh, this little book is rough, let me tell you. This should have stayed a writing exercise. This had no business being published. When Bree is back at the house, she's waiting for Diego to return and she thinks that she should run away with Diego and that they didn't need to come back. And it's like, well, duh, of course. It was stupid for Diego to go and talk to Riley at all. They should have just realized that this was a bad situation and left. I don't know, man. I think the thing is just like how stupid these characters feel. I can't imagine wanting to stick around after hearing what Riley and Victoria were saying. Riley returns to the house without Diego. He notices that one of the vampires was burned in the middle of the floor and he freaks out and loses his temper. He tells him that he doesn't have time to mess around anymore because they have an enemy. He says that they want the blood in Seattle because they used to live here and now they're back. He tells them that together they can take them down. Riley explains to them how some vampires have gifts and he says that the coven they are fighting has a mind reader so that it's very dangerous because he's going to be able to predict everything that they're about to do. Riley says that when they win, they will rule the area and other covens will know not to mess with them and that they will have as much blood as they want. Riley tells Bree to come talk to him and he says that he has a message from Diego. He says that Diego is really smart and asks about them being friends. She says that he saved her life and he tells her that they have to do surveillance and that Diego is the only one that he trusts, which reads as a pretty big lie to me, you know? It's just stupid. Riley also says something about how Riley came up with a handshake for them. And Bree says that she doesn't really know what he's talking about. And Riley's like, poor kid, Diego clearly likes you more than you like him, which is really, really easy to spot as manipulation. Next, Diego trains them and they stop training and they go to hunt. Riley takes them out into the middle of the water and they go to swim out into the middle of the water to a ferry and he lets them feed on everyone there. He says that this is what it will be like every night, which obviously we, the reader, know that that can't be possible. There is no possible way that they could do that every single night. However, this is one of the more realistic types of manipulation that Riley seems to do with the group. I can see how a group of young vampires who didn't know what they were getting themselves into, didn't know the actual like rules within their world, I can see how they would be really enthralled and excited by that. Riley tells them that there are a few things for them to know about the new coven. One, that their eyes are yellow instead of red. Two is that they have gone soft and they have a human around them as a pet. And they all take a shirt of Bella's with her scent on it and they smell it. And they all say that it smells really amazing. And he tells them whoever gets to the girl first gets to have her. He also tells them that there are 4 times out of the year for an entire day that the sun shines in a specific way that will not kill them. And that today is one of those days. And they're going to use this to surprise their enemies. And this is like so fucking dumb. I guess like if you turned a bunch of like uneducated kids into vampires, like people who weren't really going to school and, you know, they were kind of living on the streets and stuff, I can understand how you might believe this, but man, now it's time for them to go and fight. And Riley basically takes them all to the area and they all smell Bella's scent. And one of the vampires named Fred, he has this like special power that he kind of makes people feel sick when they're thinking of him or looking at him. And it pretty much makes him invisible to others. He tells Bree that he is going to leave and not fight and that she can come with him. He'll protect her with his sight thing. And she says that she has to go and get Diego. And I was like, oh my God, stop. Like, I can't. I know that she has to go to this battle because that's what happens in the book. And this is just a stupid way to get her there. They should have given her no choice. Like, she couldn't find a way out of the situation. There was no way getting out of it. If she did, she was going to be like seriously injured or killed. I don't know. This is the stupidest thing to make her go back and look for Diego. Because the thing is, if they really wanted to go and get Diego, they could have used like Fred's invisibility thing to get near the battle to see if Diego was there and then escape when they realized he wasn't. Because it's pretty obvious that Riley is lying about him being there at all. But I understand why you might want to check, but this is just the dumbest way to go about checking. Fred and Bree basically split ways and he says he's going to wait for her in Vancouver for one day and if she doesn't come, then he's going to leave. They all catch Bella's scent and start running towards it. Riley freaks out realizing that she, meaning Victoria, isn't there with the others and he says that he has to leave. He tells Bree that he will be back and once he has Victoria, he's going to come and join the battle. And he tells her that Diego is with the others and that he caught his scent. And, you know, if she hurries, she can find him and find him alive. And I was like, ugh, eye roll. Ugh, did she have to write this girl to be so stupid? I just can't. Bree can hear the fight ahead of them. She continues to rush in thinking that maybe she can still save Diego. And when she gets there, she realizes that they're badly losing. And she realizes that Diego is not there and he doesn't appear to be any of the members of the dead. So she tries to run for the trees and someone catches her. By her description, it is Carlisle. And she tells him that she didn't know what was going on, that they were lied to. She can hear quiet from the battlefield, so she knows things are kind of ending over there. She notices that Carlisle is extremely calm and in control, and that he's looking at her with empathy, which is something that kind of shocks her. And she just realizes how much she was lied to. Bree surrenders to him and Esme, and they say that they will not harm her. But Jasper comes over and he wants to kill her because the Volturi are going to come, and he says that they're going to think that they made her and they don't want to be associated with any young vampires. Jasper eventually is kind of overruled by the other two, but he tells her to close her eyes and come with him. And then he has her sit down and she's got her eyes closed, but she can hear sort of howling and growls and she's confused. She realizes that she can hear heartbeats, but she doesn't know what's happening because they don't seem to be human ones. Then Jasper covers her ears, and eventually when he takes his hands off of her ears, and tells her to open her eyes, and then Bella comes down to the field, and Bree doesn't really know what to do. The scent is very appealing. She's confused by the dynamic of what's going on, and she says that it's very different than what she thought when she'd heard that they had a human pet, and she seems to think that one of them is romantically involved with the human, and she's confused about why Bella isn't afraid of them, which, like, same, we all are. She doesn't think she can stand it, though, the thirst that she's feeling for Bella's blood. Carlisle comes over and tells her that she can stand it or they will destroy her, and that she can do it and she must do it. Bree sees the cloaked vampires come up and she realizes that the Volturi are lying to the Cullens about knowing who created the newborns. Jane from the Volturi uses her powers that cause pain, and she uses it on Bree, and Bree tells Jane everything that she knows, how she was created and by who. Bree thinks that she wants the mind reader to know that the Volturi are lying, so she kind of plays along and tells Jane a couple lies that Riley told, and then in her head she lets the Cullens know sort of the truth. And the Cullens try to convince Jane that they will take care of Bree, but they say no, and then it kind of fades to black. Okay, so final thoughts. Honestly, this was a cool writing assignment. I'm sure it was a lot of fun for her to write and a lot of fun for her to think about things from a different perspective. I think that that's a really cool thing to do when you're writing, but this had no business being published. I get that Stephanie Meyer's brand is being, like, hopelessly romantic in a dumb way. And so it's hard for me to criticize the romantic elements of this book and be like, well, they were dumb, because I willingly read a Stephanie Meyer book. So I had to have known going into this that that was going to be the case. I just felt like it was so short that it didn't really make sense, the buildup. I kind of almost wished that her and Diego had a romantic connection before we met them, and that we were kind of walking in to that romantic relationship already being established. And I think that that actually would have made it make more sense, and it would have made the stakes higher, right? Like, this person who she'd already been in love with for a little while, you could see how you could make a lot more irrational decisions about things, and, you know, things like going and running into the battle to go and find him would make more sense if it wasn't some guy who you'd only spent one day with, you know, and had one kiss with. Yeah, I don't know, man. I want to know why they just allow Stephanie Meyer to publish, like, whatever the fuck she wants, because it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense that some of this shit gets published. And that this is, like, the stuff that's appearing after multiple, like, edits and, like, beta readers and shit. I don't understand. I actually don't get it. But that's all I kind of have to say. I don't get it. Sorry that this episode is a little bit short. This was a novella, so obviously there's not as much to talk about. I hope that you guys did enjoy this, though. I would love to say I had fun reading this, but I didn't actually have that much fun reading this one. But I did it to myself. So, you know, I have only myself to blame. If you have any thoughts, comments, concerns on anything I've said in this podcast episode or any other, you can go and message us on Instagram, or you can send an email to cauldroncakesandwine@gmail.com. And you can find us on social media by going to our website, cauldroncakesandwine.com. It's the easiest way to find all of our social media. It's all linked there. Other than that, I hope you guys have a wonderful day, afternoon, or evening, wherever, whatever time you are listening to this. I hope it's wonderful. Bye.